It is 5:05. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. BT is out today. Brad Barnes, Chris Ranji, Randy Carricker with you. And Take It or Leave It coming up in a moment. Send in your text to the Hot Shots text line at 65780. Before we get to Take It or Leave It, they say you never know what you had until it's gone. And the Pittsburgh Steelers may be feeling a bit of that right now. Per HBO, Hard Knocks' third episode delivered 772,000 viewers for its Tuesday night premiere. The top-rated market was Pittsburgh. HBO and the ratings among HBO homes in Pittsburgh market were more than three times ahead of the national average. Of course, Antonio Brown caught wind of the report and tweeted, "My ex still thinks of me."
Wow. And it is special.
They are thrilled that that circus got away.
I'm guessing they are. He's so damn good.
He's great.
Right? And he's very dramatic. You just hope the good outweighs the dramatic when football starts.
Garrett Howenstein is a 20-year-old Ohio State student who now has a Cleveland Browns Super Bowl champs tattoo on his leg.
Nice.
Take it or leave it. This tattoo will never be relevant.
Leave it. It's going to be irrelevant until about February.
No, it's not going to
when they're
happen.
In the Super Bowl and winning it.
Yeah. By the way, it's a Super Bowl champs LIV, which is the next Super Bowl, I guess.
I love it.
Now, they aren't winning the Super Bowl in my lifetime or his lifetime.
Oh, come on. How old is he?
20.
Oh, come on, man.
Ain't going to happen. Sorry.
Well, I don't think he's going to die by December.
No, he's not going to. They're not winning this year.
Oh, hell yeah, they are.
They aren't even going to make the playoffs.
Baker is leading them to the promised land.
Baker's going to get killed by somebody. Maybe Mike Tomlin's defense.
Oh, man. Hey, some funny things happening around Kansas City earlier today. Actually, this was a couple of days ago. I should make that clear, but just sort of making the rounds today. Police, and this is from their the Kansas City Police Department Twitter account. Police received multiple calls this morning beginning at 11:22 a.m. about a man carrying around a topless, unconscious woman on the west side of downtown.
Come on, Tyreek.
Oh, Randy.
What the hell?
Oh, sorry.
Randy. No. Caller said he looked like he wanted to throw her over a bridge, dropped her on the sidewalk, and then drug her head over to a curb, slung her over his shoulder, and that he appeared to be trying to dress her. One said he was yelling, "Savior," while holding the woman on 12th Street. Multiple officers responded quickly. They found the man, and what they encountered was not expected. The woman was actually a life-size female doll. The man said he found it in the dumpster of a restaurant at 16th and Broadway. He had carried her to the woods. The call notes of the incident state he was told not to carry it around in public anymore. Take it or leave it. This is how most people in Kansas City get dates.
Oh, I'll take that.
I'm going to take it, too.
Think this? Is this accurate?
I'm going to leave that, you jerks.
There are photos of the guy, too, because the police cameras, the traffic cameras, picked it up. It's really something. It looks like he's naked in one of them, and he's just dragging this thing around into the woods.
I told my Uncle Jim to not take that out of the house anymore. What's wrong with him?
Take it or leave it, it is a family member of yours.
I'd probably take it.
Okay.
Yeah, probably. Take it or leave it, guys. The Battle Hawks sounds way too close to the Blackhawks.
I'll leave it. Come on.
I will leave it, too, because I didn't even... That did not occur to me until other people said it, and I still don't think about it.
I don't either.
Although Ryder, and I know he saw it, somebody pointed it out to Mike, and I never noticed it. If you turn the logo upside down, it looks like there's an STL in
it. Yeah, that's cool.
With the wings and the sword. Sword. I think it's how you pronounce
it. That's a weird word.
Sword.
Sword. This one from the Hot Shot text line 65780 from the 314. Randy, you are a grade A blank hole. Hashtag Browns.
Oh.
As Randy raises his hand.
He is very happy with that. And then two texts later, somebody says, do you guys take pride in being a-holes with a platform?
Yeah, somebody different, too.
Is this going to be Super Bowl 53 coming up or 54?
53.
And how many have the Browns played in?
Yeah.
Of these previous 52 Super Bowls?
I don't know, man.
I think I can fall back on history here.
I don't know, man, but...
This will be 54, by the way.
I don't think this is the thing that makes you an
53.
A-hole.
They're saying that...
I don't know what they're talking about.
Oh, I think the Browns fans are upset that I said that they aren't going to win a Super Bowl in that guy's lifetime.
And you said Tyreek Hill, not Kareem Hunt anyways, right?
Right, yeah.
So do you, Randy, take pride in being an a-hole with a platform?
Oh, yeah, totally. So do you.
I don't know if I take pride in it, but, yeah, it's there. You know, whatever. Yeah.
Take it or leave it. You'd rather have Johnny Football as the Blackhawks. Battlehawks.
See what you've done?
Look what I've done. You would rather have Johnny Football as the Battlehawks quarterback than Tim Tebow.
Ooh.
That's a great question. I'm going to take it also because Tim needs to be free to play baseball.
I think Tim's baseball career is done.
Nah, he's going to recover from his injury.
Is he going to recover from being bad?
Bad? Those numbers are a mirage, Randy. He is going to make his way to the Mets. And
how about if he makes his way to the Cardinals and they put him in right field? Would that be maximizing the lineup?
Would you rather have... is he a prophet? Would you say Tim Tebow's a prophet?
Yeah, teams make a lot of money off of him.
Not a prophet with an F. Prophet, P-R-O-P-H-E-T.
Oh, yeah, he is.
He's a prophet.
Yeah.
I would much rather have a prophet playing right field for the Cardinals. I feel like they'd be fine.
It'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
By the way, his career OPS at the minor league level is .638.
Are you sure it's not his average?
His average is .223.
I don't buy it.
His on-base is .299. His slug is .338.
Those minor league numbers are fudged,
Randy.
Oh,
they are deceptive.
They say...
those ballparks. And you can't see because of the light. And then the scores have no idea.
Come on. But then you heal people on the in the stands.
He did that. Yeah. He's impressive in that regard.
And he's keeping with form with a hand injury.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. different way, but yeah.
It's still a hand injury. So somebody texted, when are you a-holes or where are you a-holes going to be located in Chicago? I don't know. A lot of people calling us that
jerks
today.
Hopefully the Greystone again.
We are. As far as I understand, we will be broadcasting at Greystone in Wrigleyville for the third year in a row. And I believe it's September 20th, or is
yes,
it the 21st?
Yes. 20th, the Friday.
Friday, September 20th, Cardinals-Cubs in Chicago. We will be broadcasting yet again from Greystone.
It'll be great.
Take it or leave it. Somebody tries to fight Chris Ronji on that trip.
Oh, yeah, I'll take that.
Okay, if you're in the bathroom doing cocaine and taking 15 minutes...
Allegedly doing cocaine.
Cocaine and maybe pooping at the same time.
At least they're allegedly in there.
And I make a comment outside the door, and you get upset about it. Is it harder to go to the bathroom while you're doing coke? I don't know.
I don't know how that works. Text us, 65780. Take it or leave it. Matt Carpenter took some of those special pills from the gas station, and it caused his slump.
I'll leave it. And if he knew what was good for him, he would be... chewing it and doing it.
Exactly.
I wonder if he's eating the salsa. Or is he eating
the cereal?
You think it's all the salsa that could be like heartburn, maybe?
Is his cereal gluten-free?
I don't know, but it should be.
That could be the problem.
Salsa. And the NFL has this new passing trend for offenses. It's kind of taken over. Take it or leave it, the passing trend in the NFL is more exciting than baseball's home run extravaganza.
I'll take that, yeah.
I will also take it. I think the game's more interesting when the ball's in the air.
I did like it better when they could actually hit, when defensive players could hit offensive players. That was fun. But I understand the safety issue.
Yeah. They're trying to keep players from their brains becoming soup as they get older.
And as much as... I think the big issue with home runs is that everybody's trying to hit them and they don't care about hitting the ball. It's the old swing hard in case you hit it, and then they do, but if they don't, there aren't any singles or base running or running the bases. It's just, it's not as compelling a game as it was in the 80s. And there was the article in USA Today. I know you guys talked about it on Monday. I don't find the game unwatchable. I just find it different, and it's not as exciting as it was then.
I do wish there were more balls put in play. I do like also the fact there are a bunch of home runs that are happening, but it's the walks. It's the looking for a walk, I think, brings the game to a halt. And it just isn't fun to watch.
Yep.
That part isn't.
Big Sis, did you see that the text from the 573 about what I said?
Oh, gosh, no.
That comment about Tyreek was like a punch to the gut.
Okay.
Randy, come on.
I don't think we should. That's
come
okay.
on.
I don't know about that.
And from the 636, why is Randy being a super jerk today? It's not even entertaining. I hope people who were not saying this about his Blues when they blanked in Randy's bed year after year.
Yeah, they were. Super jerk today. Do they not listen to this show?
Yeah, I know, man.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm the bad guy.
Hey, good luck to your Browns. But I got to see something from Freddie Kitchens before I'm going to anoint you as a...
That does look like a really bad... But yeah. Baker likes him, apparently, so...
That's great.
All right.
It's a good thing.
You have handed the keys to your franchise to that kid, so yeah. I guess allow him to pick your coach.
Yep. Good
and
luck.
Good luck. Yep. You know what I've also noticed, Randy?
What?
I've had a lot of people the last couple of days say, I can't believe I'm agreeing with Ranji again. trying to figure out what exactly is it people are disagreeing with? And you know what I think I figured it out?
What?
It's the DH thing.
Oh, that makes sense.
I like the DH, and they don't, and therefore I'm always wrong. Even though I'm actually right about the DH, too.
Well, the DH, if you want the same guys in the same spot in the lineup every day, and you want to see a lot of walks and home runs, then the DH is where you're at.
Well, there's already a lot of walks and home runs.
I know, it's just perpetuating it, yeah.
It's the same thing.
It's more of it.
Well, now you'll have, hopefully, a real at-bat take place in that ninth spot. And there are all kinds of different lineups. The Yankees roll over their lineup all the time.
Michael Walker would have had a hell of a start the other night if we would have had the DH in this league. We need the DH in this league.
Well, some pitchers don't.
He had a three-hit shutout through four.
That's great.
Yeah. He would have allowed like six over six innings.
Why are you doing that to him?
History?
Come on, man.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Thanks for your texts to the Hot Shots text line at 65780. From taxed bullpens to recognizing a true number one ace when you have him, we're going to talk about it all with former Braves pitching coach Leo Mazzoni next on 101 ESPN. Welcome back to the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN with Chris Ranji. I'm Randy Carricker. Brad Thompson is out today, and it's always fun to talk to friend of the show, former Braves and Orioles pitching coach Leo Mazzoni. Leo, always good to have your voice here in St. Louis. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's smoking down here in the South, but the Braves are hot too. So we've got a good ball club to follow here in Atlanta, a good young ball club and young rotation. So especially Fried and Soroka. So I think they're going to make a lot of noise in the playoffs. So I can guarantee you that.
Is that team right now about where you expected to be at this time?
Well, I think that everybody says they're a year ahead of schedule, but who knows what the schedule was. In 91, we were well behind schedule, and we ended up going to the seventh game of the World Series. So, I know one thing. Their lineup was as good as anybody's in baseball. Maybe you got to give the edge to the Dodgers because of all the power, but the Braves have hit 200 home runs. And then you have a left-hander in Fried and a right-hander in Soroka, two young pitchers. And the worst thing, if they want to mess this thing up, they'll start taking innings away from those young pitchers, and they'll blow it.
Hey, Leo, in the last 30 years, you guys brought up a lot of good players while you were the pitching coach, guys like Justice and Gant and Chipper and Andrew Jones. I don't know that there's been anybody better than Ronald Acuna at his age.
No, he's been awful good. And I think Brian Snicker did a great job the other night when he sent a message to him that he has to run the ball out. You know, it almost didn't cost them the game, but it could have. But it cost them a chance for a real big inning. And these are lessons that you have to learn. But and I thought both guys handled it extremely well. And you know, it brings back memories of Bobby and Andrew, and then you have the Dodgers and the Braves over the weekend, which they sold out the 3-game series, and that brought back memories of when we were in the West and playing the Dodgers all the 91, 92, and 93 neck and neck for 3 years.
Do you remember the night in 93 when McGriff played his first game for you guys? The Cardinals were in town, and the fire in the press box.
Yeah, Ted Turner said the Braves have got McGriff. He's hot, and so's the stands, and the stands are on fire. But yeah, I remember that extremely well. That's when Barry Bonds told us at the All-Star break in '93 that we got McGriff too late.
Yeah, right.
But yes, you know what? That was the last great pennant race, guys.
It was,
you know, we
no
won
doubt.
104. The Giants won 103 and didn't get in.
Yeah, that's madness. And even with the wild, you know, you've seen it with the wild card sometimes.
Right.
I mean, not really with the second wild card being part of the thing, but you know, I remember 90-win teams, 92, 93-win teams not making it, even in the wild card era. Do you like
right.
that there are these two extra wild cards in both leagues?
Well, you know what? As a fan now, you know, I think I find it very interesting. I think the most exciting game is your one-game elimination where the loser goes home. But as a coach, I would have hated it. You know, I would have drove me crazy. The wild card drove me crazy. The only time I felt any extra anxiety was in the first round of a postseason with the wild card. It was a best of five, and I always felt that you wasted a 100-win season if you didn't win that first round.
No doubt.
And I always felt too that in baseball, a best of seven always tested the depth of your pitching staff and created a real champion. I think it can be hit and miss where the best team doesn't get to the World Series.
Former Braves pitching coach Leo Mazzoni with us on 101 ESPN. Leo, you mentioned those two young starters in Atlanta. You've got Walker Buehler with the Dodgers. Here in St. Louis, it looks like Jack Flaherty has turned the corner and kind of figured out that he's a number one. From your perspective, how do you know when a guy has reached that status where he's got the stuff, he's got the ability to be a number one, but he hasn't been a number one? So how do you know when he reaches that level?
Well, I think we I remember Bobby Cox telling me one time in 91 when we were trying to get, and we went to New York to play the Mets, and the Mets were real good in 91, but we swept them in New York, and Steve Avery and John Smoltz and Tom Glavine were the three pitchers that swept them. And Bobby looked at me and he said, "Leo, your young pitchers have grown up. Now you know that, you know, when you saw Steve Avery become the Dodger killer, now you know he had a chance. He was in 91, he was an ace. John Smoltz, one of the greatest comebacks in 91, he went from 2-11 to 12-2, and he turned into an ace in the postseason. And Tom Glavine was the Cy Young Award winner. But before the season started, up through the All-Star break, you know, we were 8 games out. But guys were pitching well. But then when we got into the pennant race, here's where it turned the corner. When it got to the pennant race, those three kids raised their game. They didn't shy away from it. They elevated their game. And as you all well know, those three guys took us to the seventh game of the World Series, along with a veteran like Charlie Liebrandt. But I'm talking about three young kids. And you know, they all three turned into aces in a pennant race going down the stretch in 91, and they were just kids. And, you know, it's funny. In today's game, they wouldn't even have been allowed to pitch in the postseason because they have too many innings under their belt. That makes me want to throw up.
That was my next question. I was going to ask how concerned you were about their innings.
No, you know what? Glavine and Smoltz were doing the Braves game with the Dodgers, you know, on alumni weekend, and they were up in the booth. And so anyway, they talked to Glavine and Smoltz. They said, "Well, nobody told us how many innings we should pitch or shouldn't pitch." He said, "We know that we wanted the ball every fifth day, and we expected to pitch a couple hundred innings." And that's when they were young. Steve Avery, they asked Avery, "Well, how would you attack those Dodger hitters, Leo, or Steve?" He said, "Number one, I'd go down and away fastball for strike one like Leo taught us, and then I'd take it from there." So they all turned into aces, and that's how you find out. When the money's on the line, And you turn, you know, and I'll never forget Bobby Cox looking to me and saying, you know what, Leo, now that they've grown up, here's what he added to his statement to me. He said, now that they've grown up, I don't want to hear the word potential no more. I want results. So that's when you know you have some aces.
Leo, we are in an era now, especially in the last couple of years, where the bullpen has become more important. Important isn't the right word, but it's become a bigger part of the game because they're getting used more and teams have the idea of getting starters out of there quicker. So is that sustainable? It seems like it would work on a short-term basis, works in the playoffs. Does that really work regular season? Can it for
no.
a long time?
It's short-term only, and I think if you try to do that very long, you're going to ruin your bullpens, and that's what's happened in baseball. They're all ruined, and I don't understand why. I don't understand why you don't let your starters go further into the game, you know. And the analytic BS that says a starter facing a lineup third time around in the order, you know, what if the guy's pitching good? We had a great example of that. Matt's with the Mets is pitching against the Braves. He's retired 14 in a row after 7 innings with 80 pitches, and they took him out. And they lost the game after they took him out. And I'm sitting there going, what in the hell is wrong with Callaway? You know, what is wrong with this dude, you know? I mean, it's a joke. And now and Major League Baseball's complaining about all their bullpens and how they've all broken down. Well, I wonder what the reason is for that, because they've handled those bullpens so poorly. Has anybody ever understood something like this? Say your starters go deeper into the game. You don't need 8 and 9 relievers, for crying out loud. That's a joke. Now you don't have a bench. You know, you need in today's game, I would say you need 6. Okay, now. If you teach your setup guys an off-speed pitch, learn how to throw a changeup, for your setup guys, that negates lefty-to-lefty, righty-to-righty situations. Why? Because you have the straight change to negate that. For example, if you had a Mike Remlinger, you know, he was a modern guy that threw hard, had a hard breaking ball, but he was left-handed, but he was our eighth-inning go-to guy for 4 years. Why? Because he developed a great straight change, and if the opposition wanted to pinch hit a right-handed hitter, well, go ahead. Go ahead. Greg McMichael, changeup. Go ahead. I used to tell Greg McMichael, as a right-handed pitcher, you're our left-handed reliever because of his changeup.
Because he got lefties
so
up.
You have – those are things you have to – I mean, can't you be a little innovative as a pitching coach and not just depend on some nerd sending you a statistic?
Along those lines, Leo, if a fan is watching and a pitcher is still getting people out, we always hear about the eye test. Let's get away from analytics. How did you know, even if a pitcher had set down 14 in a row, but he just wasn't what he was for the 9 in a row, how do you tell from the eye test that a pitcher is losing it?
Well, the eye test is a fatigue factor. In other words, when I went out to the mound, a lot of times it wasn't strategy. I wanted to listen to what he had to say and look in his face. And his face is going to tell me a lot, whether he's still confident, whether he's tired, whether he's in a prevent defense, and read his body language and read his mechanics. But here's one thing nobody had in baseball, and I guarantee you they don't have it now. Any team in Major League Baseball is a max-out inning. You never hear nobody talk about max-out innings, whether they're on the smartest analysis on MLB or all the Major League smart analytic guys. And the max-out inning is this. Bobby Cox had a max out inning, all right? So, in other words, say we got Glavin pitching in the 6th or 7th inning, right? Leo, is he going to max out this inning? Yeah, Bobby, he's going to max out. Well, if he maxes out, this is his last inning. Pitch count has nothing to do with it. Nothing has nothing to do with it. If he's not going to max out and his pitch count is still this, well, he's okay. So max out means, are you going to go out this particular inning and max out your effort? If you're going to max out your effort, say you're facing the heart of the lineup in the 7th. Of course, today you got to say the 5th or the 6th. We used to say the 7th or the 8th. And you're going to max out. Then once you max out, you're done. And the pitch count didn't have a damn thing to do with it. Mm-hmm. And how many innings he was pitching didn't have a thing to do with it. A pitch count, if you maxed out, then you were done. If you didn't max out and you were moving along at a nice pace and didn't show any fatigue, then you stayed in. It's, you have to be able to recognize the fatigue factor. The other thing is, we had open communication with the pitcher. Are you tired? If you're tired, you're done. If you're not tired, you're not done. So what do you think? And so I remember when we got John Burkett came over from all those other organizations, and, you know, Burkett ended up going to the All-Star game when everybody said he was done, washed up. And he goes to the All-Star game and then gets another big contract from Boston. And so I said to Burkett when we first got him over there, it was after the end of the bottom of the sixth, and Bobby goes, you know, find out if Burkey's okay, Leo, because he says, hell, if he's fine, I ain't taking him out. If he's tired, I will. I go over to Burkett and I said, hey, John, are you tired? Or are you okay? And he just kept staring at me. And I said, what the hell kind of look is that on your face, Burkett? What's going on? He was, and because he was fun, he was a funny dude.
He smiled
anyway,
when he pitched.
He said, you know what he said?
What?
He said, nobody's ever asked me. They've always told me.
That's a good thing to hear.
See? So he was wondering, you mean I get a say in this?
Mm-hmm.
You see anything wrong with that?
No.
That's the way
it's perfect common sense.
That's the way it should be.
Leo, do you find any aspect of analytics useful?
Yes. Once you command a fastball, you can use it. If you can't command a fastball, you can't. How about that for usefulness? If you can't command a fastball, you know you can do with the analytics. Well, you know what you can. We can't say it on the air. But if you can command a fastball, absolutely. But you know what we did? When you command a fastball, that means you can expand the zone. And I always like to know where we could what a hitter would chase and where I could expand the zone at. Well, that's nothing new. That's been going on for years. How about spin rate? The spin rate. Well, you know what? 30 years ago, even in my latter part of my career, the big thing that I was taught when I was a young pitching coach from Johnny Sane, who was the greatest pitching coach in the history of the game, it was the spin rate. He said, Leo, read the spins on pitches. If you understand and read the spin on pitches, if those spins are consistent, then the pitch is consistent. So, therefore, if I looked at a four-seam backspin on a fastball, if that backspin was the same all the time, I knew that fastball was going to be the same. If I saw an over-the-top spin on a two-seam fastball, that meant the ball was going to sink all the time. If I saw a change of direction on the spin, I knew it was going to be a breaking ball. If it was a straight change and the spin was the same as the fastball, then I thought the straight change with the least amount you could take off would still be effective. So you're reading spins. Okay? You got to read spins on a ball. You ever see a pitcher go, oh, that ball cut? I'd go to him, did you do that on purpose? No. Well, until you find out if you did that on purpose or you know when that ball's going to cut, when it's not, it's only 50-50 that you're going to locate it. So you got to teach the proper spins on pitches and the consistency of those spins. You ever hear any of that on your spin rate, dudes?
No, you don't. Hey,
no,
Leo.
No, you don't.
No, you don't. Leo, before we let you go.
I could talk about this all day, guys. By the way, Cardinals look pretty good. I hope they win their division.
We hope so, too. Last thing. Last year at the end of the World Series, it was still people like Sale and Price. I'm still of the belief that at the end of the day, at the end of October, it's going to be starting pitching that carries the day. I have to believe you feel that way, too.
No question about it. I think you're going to see baseball revert back a little bit to not abusing relief pitchers the way they're doing. The setup guy's getting totally abused. You know, your greatest teacher a pitcher has is innings pitched. And you know what? Let me leave you with a great comment from a 21-year-old pitcher one time. His name was Steve Avery. He was 21 years old. We were in Pittsburgh. We're down 3-2 in the NLCS. We're the underdog. Well, of course, now what do we do before the game? We go over all the scouting reports and go over all the weaknesses and strengths and weaknesses of the Pittsburgh Pirate lineup. When we leave, I'm going down to the bullpen with this young 21-year-old, and we're walking down the bullpen, and I'm making meaningless conversation. Well, Abe, you ready to go? He goes, yep. I said, how you think you're going to pitch these guys? You know, hell, we're both nervous, and there's no sense in hiding it. We were both nervous. Anyway, he says, you know what, Leo? He says, I'm going to go down to the bullpen. I'm going to warm up, find out what I got, and pitch accordingly. I said to him, that makes more sense than any scouting report or stat I've ever heard. That's he won 1-0, by the way.
Right, I remember. That's a self-aware 21-year-old.
Yeah, that's a 21-year-old.
That's great.
Now, whatever happened to a pitcher going down and warming up and saying, well, I like this pitch better than today? How about, do they ever get a, how about, well, I'll be okay once I get a second win? Well, they don't get a chance to get a second win. And what if that particular pitch one day isn't as good, but he goes to another pitch because it feels better and he's having more success with it? Well, you've got to be able to adapt and adapt to the game and adapt to the innings. And if you don't have a particular pitch, you may find it after the first time around the lineup. I mean, these are feel things. You've got to feel that. You know, it's like Smoltz said, you know, he said you could put 10 baseballs in your hand, six of them will feel different.
Right, yeah.
So's the brain. It works that way.
Words to Succeed By from Leo Mazzoni. It's always great to have you with us. We thank you so much, Leo. Good to talk to you, and we'll do it again soon.
You're absolutely right. You know, yeah, thanks for having me on. And I love St. Louis. As you've always heard me say, some of the greatest fans in the world, one of my favorite places to go when I was with the Braves.
Love it. Perfect, sir. Thank you.
You got it, my man. Anytime.
Leo Mazzoni, former Braves pitching coach and a fun guy. Good guy to have on a show on 101 ESPN.
That dude is wound up.
He is.
Might be yelling at clouds right now, but he's
fun to listen
up.
To, though. Coming up next in the Fast Lane, we want your questions now. Do you have a comment about Leo Mazzoni and that interview? That was great. Whatever you've got, send them our way to the Hot Shots text line 65780. And Big Sizz will have your questions for us in the Sports Six Pack next on 101 ESPN. We appreciate your texts from the Hot Shots text line 65780. And with your questions for us, here's Big Sizz.
We are in the middle of the NFL preseason. What quarterback do you think will be the first to lose his starting job this year? Besides Mitchell Trubisky, obviously.
Oh, you quit.
I don't think it's going to be Eli Manning.
Case Keenum.
I'm going to go with Marcus Mariota.
Ooh. I wonder if he would do better if he was somewhere else.
That's what they thought about Ryan Tannehill. That's why they got him.
He can't stay healthy.
Tannehill?
No, Mariota.
Neither can Tannehill, by the way. But you can't go wrong with either of those guys. I think there's a lot of really safe quarterbacks. This is an unusual year in the NFL. I think the three that we've brought up are probably the only three at the moment that, if they're healthy, are vulnerable. And it'll be interesting to see if Keenum even gets the opening day start.
Well, Haskins might get it.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, I want your opinion on what you would do and what you think Schilt would do. Let's say that the Cardinals are in the playoffs and they start today. Is Carpenter in the starting lineup? Is he on the bench? Is he even on the roster? What you would do and what Schilt would do.
Playoffs started today. I think... Okay, let's... presume that they're in the NLDS against
Atlanta.
Yeah, probably Atlanta. I'm thinking that Carpenter is probably on the roster, and unless it's Keuchel, probably in the lineup. Here's what I would do. I would have the same lineup as today. I think Schilt would have Carpenter in the lineup.
All right. If the question is if it started today,
yeah,
I'm having Edmund in the lineup regardless. Even though it's not a dramatic improvement, he still had some kind of contribution in the last couple weeks. So I'm starting him at third. I feel better about him playing the position.
Me too.
And then the rest of the lineup as it is. But as far as him making the roster altogether, don't you think he kind of has to show them a little something in the final month in order to warrant it? Or do you think he gets the call just because he's Matt Carpenter?
I really think he does. Even if you have what you should have a 9-man bullpen. You should have a 13-man staff, so you've got 4 bench players. Now, Jose Martinez will be healthy then. So Martinez, Munoz, Weeders... and then you're looking at either Thomas or Carpenter. And I think Carpenter wins there.
I think so, too, especially since Thomas hasn't had any – he's had no reps.
Yeah.
Unless he gets them. But Yeah, that's probably your roster going into the playoffs.
I do think that the Cardinals and, I don't know if it's Schilt or Gersh or Moe, but I think the Cardinals will have Carpenter in the lineup, would have Carpenter in the lineup if the playoffs started today.
For the XFL here in St. Louis, not necessarily from the league perspective,
Battle
of the
Hawks.
St. Louis team. That's right, the Battlehawks. What are some of the most important factors for the XFL and the Battlehawks to succeed in this market?
This is an intense football market. I'm of the belief that it makes sense for them to have some local flavor. But the big thing, like with any sports team, is to be exciting. To be exciting and to be competitive. And I do think in a league like this, it helps to win. But to have exciting games and have a good game day experience and make it affordable for families, those would be my big three.
That last one is the one that's where it has to start. It's got to start by being cheap enough for people to go and not have to worry about it. Parking can't be a problem. Going into the game, concessions, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then whatever interactive elements they're planning to put together, and when we talked to Kurt yesterday about it, it sounds like they're still tossing around ideas about that, letting people on the field maybe before and during halftime and stuff like that. I think it depends on how much interaction there's going to be. But it's going to start with whether or not it is affordable to go regularly. Because really, at first, it's going to be a novelty. People will go, let's get a look at this and see what it's all about. And if the product is fun one way or the other, then you'll get them to come back.
I'll be interested to see with the Washington and New York franchises and having outdoor stadiums in February and March, how they draw. The only dome stadium in the league is our building here.
Right.
Tampa Bay is fine. Seattle should be fine. L.A. and Houston and Dallas will, in general, be fine. But those two franchises, New York and Washington, is anybody going to want to go when it's 10 degrees outside?
Well, especially when you're in a market where there already is football and the season just ends. Are you starving for football so much that you're going right back into it a month or two later?
Washington, you will be because
you won't be in the playoffs.
Right.
But I don't know. And maybe you'll have some Washington fans that just want to stick it to the Redskins ownership and be like, screw you, look, I'm going to this game instead.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you'll get enough of those people.
I understand the consternation with the name Battlehawks, and I'm ambivalent about it, but I think Defenders and Guardians are both stupid names. Just saying.
Kind of sound like soccer names, I think.
Yeah.
Do you like Renegades?
Not really. I would rather have more offensive type names than Guardians and Defenders. I'd rather have Offenders.
Oh, yeah. What if we were the St. Louis Offenders?
That'd be good.
Okay.
Would you guys have an issue if the XFL kind of opened the doors and invited players like DGB and guys like that with a troubled past?
I know that Vince McMahon initially when the league was founded said that they wouldn't have anybody with a felony conviction. Wouldn't bother me at all.
Me neither. They got to have players. They got to fill out rosters. And if you have, for the league, the truth is you need to have, to go along with all the stuff we're talking about in the appeal to people, one of the things that will do it is if you, and it may not be at a great level, but if you have people, if you have players that people know who they are, then you're more likely to get people to pay for the product. But I don't know if it's going to be a huge bump, but I think it's some.
We've talked before about certain contracts for the Cardinals kind of handcuffing them with multiple guys and a logjam situation. If Michael Wacha gets a qualifying offer and accepts it, would that handcuff the Cardinals next year?
It wouldn't handcuff them, but I don't think they're going to offer it. Do you?
I wouldn't if I were them.
Because they'll probably take it.
Yeah, $17.5 million for Wacha, though, which is essentially what you're paying Miles Michaelis. I don't know that that's a very good expenditure of money, but as baseball owners will tell you, there's no such thing as a bad one-year contract. But I think his last 16, 17, 18, his last 4 years, he did take the ball 30 times one of those years. So I'll say in three of the last 4 years, he hasn't been a $17 million pitcher.
Right. So it should not handcuff them financially if he were on board for that amount of money, but I just don't see a reason to do it.
They should be able to find another guy on a $17 million one-year contract that could do what he does. Maybe even a $12 million one-year contract.
Well, I'd even be willing to go $34 million for 2 years for somebody who's slightly better.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
In all the years you guys have watched the NFL, what player or couple players were the most overwhelming physical players? Like, for me, it was watching Mike Allstott growing up.
There's no doubt that, for me, it was Lawrence Taylor. What he was able to do to poor offensive linemen and to quarterbacks was just unbelievable. And that combination of size and speed was absolutely remarkable.
That's a really good call. That's a very good call. Is Allstott yours? Is
yeah.
that what you said?
Yeah, when I was growing up, he was a monster.
And people that saw so Jim Brown will tell you. And Jim Brown weighed what guards weighed. Jim Brown was a 230-pound running back, and at that time, guards weighed 230 pounds. And he ran the 4.440. So I never saw Jim Brown play, but people that did watch him play say that he was an amazing specimen. By the way, J.J. Watt is a pretty amazing physical specimen himself. And Bo Jackson was too.
Talking about specimen, how about the fridge?
Yeah.
That guy was a specimen.
Yeah.
And big boy.
I put a thing up on Facebook today. I heard the song Nobody Does It Better, and there's a great video with Walter Payton. I think in terms of just being a football player, this is an overwhelming physical abilities. I would say Walter Payton and Jerry Rice, for me, are the two best football players I've ever seen.
Walter made finesse part of the game when it really isn't a finesse game. But
he was incredibly physical, too.
Yeah, he was. He certainly was. But he was also, I think he was one of those first, as agile as he was.
He was amazing.
The dude took ballet classes, and that was unheard of. I mean, I don't know if players do that kind of thing now. They're doing their own sort of agility stuff. But there wasn't anything like that when he was playing football, so he took it upon himself to go to ballet classes.
Yeah.
Because that helped him in that area.
December 16th, 1979, O.J. Anderson's rookie year. He leads Peyton by about 130 yards in the rushing race. And my dad drives me up to Soldier Field so that we can watch the coronation of O.J. Anderson, the next great running back in the NFL. And Larry Wilson was the Cardinals coach. Bill Bidwell wanted to play Steve Fisarkowitz, former number one pick. It is 3 degrees at Soldier Field, and that's before the wind chill whistling off of Lake Michigan. The coldest still to this day that I have ever been in my life. OJ gets hurt after 14 carries and something like 39 yards. Walder carries at 33 for 157. Beats him for the rushing title by 5 yards, 16-10 to 16-05. And the Bears win the game 42-6.
Awesome.
Awful.
Well,
Walter was awesome.
I'm telling you.
But when you go up in 3 degree weather and the wind chill was probably 15 below to see one guy get the record and he's not even playing, it wasn't great for me.
That is a special kind of cold.
Yeah, it's memorable.
Did you take the hot brick?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
The hot brick.
No?
What about that?
No, we didn't take the hot brick. Oh, but they handed out free hand warmers, those kind that you squeeze together.
Right. Yeah.
They handed them out free because it was so dangerously cold.
For people who don't know what we're talking about, Randy's father used to sneak in a cooler into ball games, and inside the cooler was
football
a hot
games.
Brick.
Yeah, to keep our hot dogs warm.
I don't need those hand warmers. I've got the brick.
Yeah, put the brick in the oven for like 3 hours and heated it up, and then the hot dogs would stay warm in the coldest of weather.
Genius.
It's amazing.
Randy, you mentioned MARP's numbers since the end of last year. 88
last month.
I
got it somewhere here.
I'll give you time.
203 batting average, 88 for 433.
Okay. Is there anything about MARP's numbers, what you're seeing from him recently, that makes you think he won't have that bounce back like Dexter Fowler did?
I don't see it, but I didn't see it with Fowler either.
But it took an offseason for that.
But
that's what I'm talking about with the reset button.
Yeah.
Maybe he needs an offseason to get back to his old self.
Last May, when the Cardinals brought him in, I think he was sixth in the league in hard hit percentage. He's in the high 200s now, like 280s. There are no peripheral numbers, none, that make you think, okay, he's going to get it going.
And his strikeout rate, highest of his career.
Yeah, and walk rate, lowest.
Yep.
Thanks, Big Sis.
Thank you.
And thanks for your text to the Hot Shots text line at 65780. As we roll on in the fast lane, since you listen to this show, we know you probably find enjoyment in laughing at dumb and immature things. Well, so does Keith Hernandez. That's next, before With All Due Respect on 101 ESPN.